Thank you.
My son is a Florida Gators fan, by the way, so and I'm a Tennessee Vols fan, so this is hard on all of us, let's just put it that way. Let me start by, I want to thank David and the rest of all of you for allowing us to join you this weekend. And I say us, my wife Lauren is in the ladies' class across the way. My daughter Emily is here. My son Andrew had to stay back home, had a late workout today, but hopefully you'll be seeing more of him here soon. I think this is a really neat idea, and by the way, I'm going to steal this and take it back to our elders at Brentwood and see if we can do something similar. The only change is we are going to have qualified speakers for all the sessions, including this one. So you'll quickly figure out that I'm not a preacher or teacher by trade. I think this is a neat experience that you've allowed me to come in and speak to you, but you will see me referring to my notes much more often than your typical speaker. I'm sure this will be a little more choppy. I don't know whether I've got too much material or too little, so we'll watch the clock, and when people start falling asleep, we'll probably call it a night. So I'd ask you to bear with me. My wife is speaking right now in the ladies' class, and she's got a bunch of pictures and stories. I've seen her deck, so if you get bored, you can head her way. Hers is probably going to be a little more entertaining than this one. But I hope this will be beneficial to you. It certainly was for me just thinking about these things. I stand before you as a man with probably a lot of the same challenges and career and family dynamics as a lot of folks in this room have lived through and are challenged with. So I was thinking about what it was that makes me qualified to speak about this summer season. Let's call it ages 20 to 40. And I thought, well, you know, I was able to overcome, and then I stopped and said, no, that's not it. Or I think I figured out, no, that's not it. So I figured out eventually that the only thing that makes me qualified to speak about this is I've lived through it. I'm older than 40, let's just put it that way. So I think that's about the only thing that qualifies me for this. I have mostly survived this stage, and based on how my back felt after the drive down here today, I'm in the fall season. I'm convinced of that. Now, so that's about all that qualifies me for this, and I just wanted to say up front, you're going to quickly figure out I'm no expert here. I've made mistakes in a lot of these areas that we're going to be talking about tonight. So just a quick snapshot. Hey, welcome. Just a quick snapshot of who I am. David mentioned some of this, but just for context, I'm David's brother-in-law, and that makes me Adrian's brother, but I'm David's brother-in-law. I live in Franklin, Tennessee, just south of Nashville. Attend the Brentwood congregation there. Also just south of Nashville. My wife Lauren and I met when I was in school at Lipscomb some 22 and a half years ago is when we were married. We started attending Brentwood during that time. So we graduated in May of 96. I started my first job in June of 96, and we got married in July of 96. So I got all those big changes kind of out of the way at once. And David mentioned something a while back when we were just chit-chatting. He said, you know, you've been working at the same company, going to the same church, and married to the same woman for over 20 years. And I think he was saying you're like the most boring guy ever, but I would say stable. That's the adjective I would use for it. But that just gives you a little bit about my background. David mentioned I work for Cigna Healthcare. I'm in the risk management area. It's a boring job. Only company I've ever worked for. Lauren, my wife, taught elementary school for a few years after we got married, and then when Andrew was born, she's been a stay-at-home mom, although now she's starting to dabble in some travel planning work. So I'm waiting on her business to take off so that I can be the stay-at-home dad now that my kids don't need a stay-at-home parent, but we will see how that goes. But as we begin this discussion of the summer season, my definition of the season is this. I'd probably define it as about the time you finish school and get a job, run through the time when you often get married and start a family, and runs through maybe the time when your kids are still at home, but they're getting older. So it's a different set of challenges as your kids get older. I'm kind of in that stage now with my youngest child starting high school next year. So that kind of gives you an idea of where I am. I think David kind of framed up 20 to 40, and that's kind of what I was thinking, but I know people's life circumstances are a little bit different there. So as I was thinking about how I wanted to frame this discussion, I just spent some time reflecting on the last 20 years or so. And one of the things that surprised me the most, you young guys will figure this out one day, but it's just a blur. It's way more of a blur these last 20 years, way more of a blur than I would say my youth. I can remember individual events from just about every year when I was a kid. these last 20 years, there are chunks of time when I have a hard time remembering what I was up to, what Lauren and I were spending time on, what the kids were into. What do we even do before we have kids? It's all just sort of a blur. And, you know, that old saying about the days feeling long and the years feeling short is really starting to hit home a lot more. I'm not sure why that is. It has something to do with the frantic pace that I think we set for ourselves, and we can't blame that on anyone else but us. I'm not much better at that now than I was before. I guess tomorrow morning will mark the fourth state this month that I will wake up in, so I'm not going to know where I am, in the morning. But I would say that now that the kids are getting a little older and I'm kind of out of the summer stage heading into fall, I do think the pace is starting to slow just a little bit. So I've lived through two phases. I'm entering the third, I think, maybe a little taste of fall. So I don't have the experience that a lot of you gentlemen in the room have as it relates to this. But for me, the seasons that I've lived through so far, summer was the hardest. Spring was easier. I'm optimistic that fall is going to be a little less hectic and a little easier, although I have no idea. But for me, summer was hard. The heat of the season, for lack of a better analogy, really, really, I would say, wore me down. And as we begin this discussion, and you're going to see me looking over my shoulder too, I'm likely going to get off track here at some point, so somebody wave at me if I'm talking about something you don't see up there. But just wanted to provide a quick overview of the season. This slide is actually from some material that David shared with us. I thought it was good to set the stage of what we'll be talking about here. And you will come up, I'm sure, with your own way of kind of summarizing this season in your head. But in this case, the author defined the theme of this period as identity. And I thought that was a very good way of thinking about it. This season is the time, for the most part, when we really establish our identity. It doesn't mean we fully form it. It'll morph some over time. But for the most part, we start to carve out, I think, our identity in the various aspects of our lives. Before this, I think our parents heavily influence our identity. And after this, I think a lot of times we're so set in our ways, it's really hard to change our identity. So this is the time period when you can influence that and form that. It's a time period when we start to carve out our niche and what our area of expertise or specialty will be. And you'll see on the slide here, and oh, by the way, this is on your handout too. I should have mentioned that, but you'll see a few key questions for this time period. I won't get into any of these in any detail. We'll touch on a few of them as we go through the material the rest of the way, but it's when you start to answer questions like, what do I want out of life? What do I really believe? What convictions will fall out from those beliefs? Those questions may be more for your 20s. And then when you start to get into your 30s, it becomes maybe more about managing priorities and commitments and time demands. So this maybe assumes that this is when families begin, marriages, children. Obviously, we'll all have our own timetables. But for me, at least, that started in my 20s. So that's one way to think about this. I'll mention just one more. Another way that I think about this time period, similar but just slightly different, is this idea of setting a foundation. Now, I think a lot of you would probably say, well, you do that much earlier, and that is true. But I think for a lot of us, the foundation that's set earlier in our lives is pretty heavily influenced by others, by parents, teachers, coaches, whatever. We may have a foundation, but really when it comes largely from others, that may not be quite our own foundation. So we can reject it, we can accept it, but to make it fully your own and embrace it, I think this time period is when you start to do a lot of that based on your own beliefs and your own convictions and your own priorities, the ones you set, maybe not the ones that others have set for you. So we'll talk about later this foundation, I think, carries through our entire lives, and we need to be aware of that at this age. This isn't a time period when we can dabble in things and have the expectation that we will eventually grow out of it. The pattern and foundation that we set at this time in our lives is the one that most likely will carry through and stick with us for good. So I recently read a book, one of the two, you're one ahead of me, a couple books I've read, one about habits called The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg. I would recommend anybody that has problem breaking habits. It's a really good read, quick read on this topic. And I came away really impressed at how adept our mind is at establishing and sticking to a pattern. We're really good at that. Now, those patterns can be good or bad. But either way, it's very difficult to change. And we need to be aware that it's this time period in our lives when we often set a lot of those patterns. So this calls to mind one scripture, and by the way, I think on the back of your handout, which I'll have you flip to in a minute and think about some things, maybe jot some things down, there's a section on the right-hand side for some scriptures if you want to go back and look at some of this. But one passage that's called to mind is in Matthew chapter 7, beginning in verse 24. Very familiar passage that I think is connected to this. I'll read it here quickly. Matthew 7, beginning in verse 24, where Jesus says, "Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock." Verse 26, "But everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. And the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it fell, and great was its fall." Very familiar passage to us. Sometimes I think we can trick ourselves into thinking because we know about it, then it must mean we're doing it. Those are two very different things here. But one thing that I have learned about this season that I think I'm very confident that I'm right on this, the storms will come. Maybe you've made it to age 20 or so by dodging those storms. 20 to 40, something's going to hit. And I think this verse is a good one for us to point back to, because the question is going to be whether our foundation will hold up. It's really hard to redo a foundation once the house is on top of it. And to me, this is the time period when that foundation starts to be built in the spring season, and in early summer it's established, and we need to get that right the first time. So anyway, some key questions here. Who do I want to be? But I'm going to argue that really isn't enough. We got to take that a step further and land on a set of actions that we're going to undertake that's going to help propel us to that person we're going to want to be. It isn't enough just to want to be a Christian or a good husband or a good father. If we don't, at this age, define the actions that we're going to take to get us there and move us that direction, then it's not going to mean a lot for us. So we'll talk some more about that as we go through. All right, the way I'm going to sort of set up the rest of the discussion is we're going to look, this is going to sound so business-like, I apologize, this is what you get when you have a non-preacher up here, but we're going to look at this from two different sides of the same coin. We're going to talk about opportunities and advantages that we have during this time period, some things that are sort of playing to our favor, and some things we want to take advantage of, and then we're going to flip and talk about, I'll call them risks or disadvantages, some things that we better be on the lookout for, that are going to cut the other way, and we got to be prepared to deal with those, and we'll look at some scriptures that refer to those. So one thing I want to mention before we get into that really gets to how important I think it is for us to think about and understand what we're up against in the various phases of our lives. We need to have a plan before we get into the middle of the battle of a phase like this or any of the other phases. And the scripture that comes to mind is one we're all very familiar with. You can flip to 1 Peter chapter 5. Some of you probably don't even need to flip. You know what verse I'm going to. Devin alluded to this idea earlier when he was talking about the temptation of Jesus. 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8. Anybody without looking there, what's that scripture? Who's that scripture talking about? Talking about the devil. It's talking about Satan. So what do we find out about him there? What's he doing? He's our adversary. That's pretty important. He is our adversary, and he's doing what? He's prowling around, not sitting still. He's at work. So you can be sure of this. The devil has a plan for you. My guess is the devil's well aware of all these risks and disadvantages that we're going to be talking about here in just a little while. He understands that very well. So we better understand it too, or we don't have much of a chance when we're fighting those battles against him. So surviving those challenges during this time frame is not going to happen by chance. We got to know what we're up against. So before we get into that discussion, if you would flip to the back page, I want each of you to do something just for a minute or two. We're going to get into these advantages and disadvantages, or if you don't have a pen or pencil, don't worry about it. Just think about it for a minute, just a couple of minutes. I want you to go through before you see what I've come up with and just think about what comes to mind for you. Some of you have lived through this phase, and the phase after this have a lot more experience looking back on this than I do. What are some things that come to mind when you think about advantages and disadvantages of this period? Things you need to be able to take advantage of and things you need to be on the lookout for. And we'll take just a couple of minutes, and then at the end, depending on how we manage time, we may come back to this. give just a few more seconds and we'll get moving. All right, you'll see the section below where you're taking notes. There's another section there, which is really just intended if you want to jot down some of the stuff we're talking about from here on out. Totally up to you. But let's get going, see if these connect anything you wrote here, and we'll get back to this at the end. But the first item that I want to talk about is this idea of fresh starts. I mentioned before when you're growing up, a lot of what you do is controlled somewhat by, either directly or indirectly, hopefully, by your parents, and that in some ways can be a very good thing. I'm not trying to imply that that isn't a good thing. For me, it was a good thing. If I let myself be led by the guidance of my parents, I was going to conduct myself better than if I did what I wanted to do. But it can also lead to a certain comfort level. Your entire life at this point has probably been spent mostly with your immediate family, a little bit of a controlled environment. You probably have a set of friends that you grew up with, school, church, sports teams, whatever. Same circle of friends for a long time. Maybe you went to the same local church for a long time and have a lot of those established relationships. And while that can be a very good thing from a stability perspective, it can also mean that you become somewhat stuck in a rut. And I think when you enter this phase of your life, remember, I'm viewing this as sort of you get out of school, you get your first job, different environment than in college. That changes in a big way. Maybe the group of friends you grew up with are not the right type of influence on you anymore. Well, suddenly you've got the opportunity to rebuild that circle of friends with a brand new circle. You'll have a new circle of friends at work, most likely, that you get thrust into whether you like it or not and have to learn how to interact with them and spend time with them. But either way, you find yourself with an opportunity to have a fresh start. And I think this applies to both your choice of friends and the way that you interact with them. So when I entered this phase of my life, my circle of friends was heavily, at that up until then, was heavily driven by who I went to school with and church with and who I played baseball with. I was a big baseball guy. So that was partially a good thing, but the baseball crowd was kind of rough. So I had become accustomed, to being around them and had a certain way of interacting with that group, and that was not always good. But once I started working out of school, suddenly I was interacting with a totally new group, much different than the group of folks that I spent a lot of time with in college, in the dorm, and in the locker room. So it allowed me a fresh start in terms of how I was going to handle things with this new group, what kind of influence I was going to try to be around them, and some of the things that I should have been doing all along and was not doing a good job of, like making sure that I was the right example for that group, even if I was the only one. Things like talking to people about my faith. I was able to use this time as a fresh start to take advantage of some of those opportunities and sort of hit the reset button in terms of my approach, how I would approach some of those situations. So mentioned friends, coworkers. Then obviously if you get married during this time, there's another relationship that you're going to have a fresh start on. There's no history there, totally clean slate. Maybe some of your prior relationships haven't been that healthy. Here you find yourself with this great opportunity to get your marriage off on the right foot, and that opportunity you will never have again. Sure, you can repair things that break, as when Devin mentioned the person who was addicted to drugs. We see that often, right? People start off rough and they fix it. I'm not saying that's impossible, but you will only get one opportunity to start off on the right foot. You can fix it later, and it's really hard. So we need to think about that as we approach this, this time in our lives. Then if and when children enter the picture, well, again, a blank slate. Maybe you didn't grow up in the family situation that you want for your children. So that may be baggage for you, but it doesn't dictate how you're going to interact with your family. You get a fresh start. You only have this one shot to set the right foundation, back to what we talked about earlier, for your family, for your children. We all know about the formative years for children. This is it. If you wait, another thing I can speak from experience from a little bit. If you wait till your children are older to decide that you want to do things differently, it's going to be hard. It's going to be infinitely more difficult than if you start that when they're tiny. You get one shot at this opportunity that the Lord has blessed you with. Obviously, that opportunity comes with great responsibility, and figuring that out after you've let the first few years of your child's lives go by is something that you will regret as you move through this phase. So one passage that comes to mind here when we think about this idea of fresh starts is in Ephesians chapter 5, Ephesians 5, 16. If you want to be flipping over there. In that passage, Paul's going through in that general area some instructions for wives, husbands, children, servants, masters, etc. Before he gets to that, though, he warns us there in Ephesians 5, verse 15. He says, look carefully how we walk, not as unwise, but as wise. And then in verse 16, there's that phrase. He says, redeeming the time, or making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. And never is that more true than when you think about those first few years with your children. That impressionable time for our children only comes once, and we've got to be ready to make the best use of that time. We've got to be able to redeem that time. But along with that, and more important than any of that, this is a time in our lives that lends itself to fresh starts in our relationships, in our relationship with God. Lots of people, including lots of folks in this room for sure, can do a lot of stupid things during that first phase of our lives, that spring phase. And I know a lot of people who have been paralyzed by that. Maybe they get to this phase in their life and they would love to hit reset and start over, but they just can't get past their own past. We can't have that attitude. We should view this stage, finishing school, you're out on your own, maybe a new job, maybe starting a new family, maybe now part of a new local church. We should view all of those items as perfect opportunities for us to renew, or if need be, maybe start for the first time a real relationship with God. We can't let our past struggles that maybe have caused us to waste a portion of our youth to now hamper us so much that we waste a part of this phase as well. Maybe the amount of time you spent studying the Word or praying or your participation in the local church, maybe that was lacking when you were in your spring phase. Maybe that's kind of what folks had come to expect from you at your local congregation. So you just stayed in that spot. It was comfortable. Now you're at a new congregation maybe. Great opportunity to step out and start being more active in different ways to serve the Lord. Maybe you were at a congregation where some of the older members just took care of everything, and you didn't really have opportunity to step out and do things. Well, now you're in a different spot. You're in a different congregation. You're at a different point in your life, and you've got the opportunity to step out with that time and energy, which we'll talk about in a minute, to do things that maybe you haven't had the opportunity to do before. What are you going to do with that time or energy in this phase? Are you going to replace maybe some of the things that you were spending a bunch of time on when you were younger that don't interest you that much anymore? Are you going to replace it with just another distraction, another waste of time, or are you really going to decide at this point that you're going to do something to improve your relationship with God as you get started off on the right foot in this phase? So another area that I think creates a great opportunity for folks in this stage is this is where you're going to hit your peak of energy, health, and confidence. Now, maybe that's really more true in spring, at least for energy and health. But I think maybe you have less opportunity to really take advantage of that during that first phase in your life. Once you hit this stage where you have more independence, maybe more influence, more resources, there's more potential benefit, I think, from that energy or health. Maybe I should say it this way. When you compare it to the fall, and I'm assuming the winter stage, you're going to look back fondly at this stage and wish you would have taken advantage of some of that energy and health that you had. So I think Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 1, so we looked at the end of Ecclesiastes 12 and Devin's talk. If you look at verse 1, it says, remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come, and the years draw near, of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them. I'm starting to understand this better as I get older. There are some things that used to be really fun for me that I don't want any part of anymore. Roller coasters is one of those. I don't know how you young guys feel about that, but just wait. It's coming. And there are going to be things later in your life that you're going to look back on and wish you would have done. That can be in service to the Lord or not. Once you get to the point where you're looking back, though, it's often too late. So you just don't have the energy or health to do them anymore. Maybe it's something big and noteworthy like doing mission work on behalf of Christ, but I'm not talking about just stuff like that. Maybe you just wish you would have coached your son's Little League team, and now you don't have enough energy to do it anymore. Or he's like my son, he's old enough that you can't coach anymore. They don't want the parents around anymore, right? You eventually will phase out of that. Maybe you wish you would have just helped your brothers and sisters when they needed manual labor, and now you're too old and your back hurts too much, you can't do it. It can be a million things like that that you have the opportunity to do at this age that once you get past this phase, maybe you're just not able to do it anymore. And that's just the health and the energy piece, but also confidence. There's a certain amount of confidence that I think people at this age have that maybe as you get older and life beats you down a little bit, you start to lose a little bit of that, I think. Now, this isn't a rule. I'm sure that for some folks in this room, you're thinking that really this is when you began to get more confidence, and that's certainly true too. But I know for me, I was much more confident and bold in my 20s than I am now. And there will be opportunities in this phase to use that confidence and boldness in service to the Lord. Maybe in some of those new relationships I mentioned earlier, taking the opportunity to talk to people about God, that sometimes as we get older, I think we find we're less willing to take those risks and to step out and have those conversations. I wasn't as worried much about what people thought or how they would react to me 20 years ago. Now, maybe that was just young and dumb enough to not, you know, be worrying about it or not considering enough. I don't know. But I do know that when I look back, there could have been a lot of good, I think, that came from that confidence that I had. And as I look back, I'm not sure I used that very well for the Lord's cause. I probably used it more for my own good, frankly, in how it impacted my career than I did for the Lord's good. So just something else for us to consider about this phase. And I mentioned this a little bit earlier. This is also the time in our life when I think we can really stack the deck in our favor and set ourselves up well for the future if we're able to develop healthy habits. Now, that applies to mundane things like diet and exercise. Those are things that can be hard to turn around in a positive direction if you let them get away from you at this age. But more importantly, our spiritual habits is what I'm really talking about. Everything from things like our church attendance. Are we going to establish that as a priority for ourselves and, if we're married, have children, for our family from day one? It's much easier to make that decision one time early on. Set that expectation for yourself and for your wife and children and stick to it. That's much easier than starting off sloppily and trying to clean it up later. But not just that, things that are important in developing our personal relationship with God, our study habits, our prayer habits, all things that are much easier to set on the right path early than it is to address and improve later on. It's not impossible to fix those things. As we talked about earlier, we've all seen people that have been able to do that, but the effort level that takes is much higher than if we just start off in the right place. So I'll give a personal analogy to this. My son's been playing baseball forever. He's now a junior on the local high school team, and he used to play other sports too. And one of the things that I always tried to talk to him about as it related to sports and other areas too was that you need to do your work early. Anybody ever heard anybody's coach ever use that phrase? I had a coach that used to talk to me about that all the time. Do your work early. So in baseball, that might mean, you know, if you're a pitcher, first pitch, strike. Do your work early. Get ahead in the count, makes the whole at bat that much easier. If you get behind, you're in trouble. You know, take advantage of early scoring opportunities. It's easier to play from the lead. If you want to score from second base, it's all about getting the big lead at the start. That's much more important than how fast you can run from third to home. It's all about doing your work early. So I've preached that to him forever as it relates to schoolwork too. Probably less successful in the schoolwork, but you know, he gets home tired from practice and we talk about get your schoolwork done. I know you're tired, but if you go, you know, hang out on the couch for a couple hours and then get up, you're going to be more tired than you are now. Get your work done early, relax later. So I think this is the phase in our lives when we have the opportunity to do our work early. Your habits that you build at this point in your lives will, in all likelihood, they're going to be with you forever. That's just the reality of how things work for us and how habits seem to stick. So how do you spend your time? How do you interact with your new spouse? How do you participate in your local congregation? Anybody ever experienced how difficult it is to get someone who's been part of a local church for a long time and not really active? Anybody ever experienced how hard it is to light a fire under them and get them a lot more active? It's hard. It's just a pattern that we set for ourselves. It can be positive or negative, but those patterns that we set at this age are very difficult to break. We see that in our physical lives all the time. We know how hard it is to break habits. Show of hands, anybody in here have a, I'm not talking about a sinful habit. Anybody got a bad habit that they would like to break? Show of hands, anybody? So why don't you just go do it? Like, it's hard. Breaking habits is really hard. There's an author of another book, my second book I read. Author James McKay had a quote that I think is relevant here. He said, "Tomorrow you promise yourself will be different, yet tomorrow is too often a repetition of today." And that's just the way it is. We know that. Here's the good news. Studies have shown that habits that are good are just as sticky as habits that are bad. So if we can use this time in our lives to set those good habits, it really sets us up for success as we start to age. So I got plenty of bad habits, but I will admit I have some good ones. Exercise is one of them. We're talking about wear and tear injuries before. When I get up in the morning, I just don't feel right if I don't go down and do something. Get on the treadmill, hop on the elliptical, do something. I just don't feel like my day's starting right if I don't do that. So I sometimes get wear and tear injuries because I'm too stubborn to just take a couple days off when I get aches. So that's kind of stupid. But the point is, habits really stick with you. It's easier for me to go down and exercise, even though I wouldn't say enjoy it. It's easier for me to do that than it is to not do it now. So that's an example of how, you know, something mundane like exercise, a good habit, can stick with us and become almost, you know, involuntary. So we can do the same thing when it comes to our spiritual lives. When we get over the slide that lists the disadvantages and challenges in just a minute, sometimes those things get crowded out by the distractions around us, and we'll spend a little time on that. But setting these lifelong habits early in life, I think, is very important. So the last area that I want to mention here is, I'll go really quickly here, this ability to influence younger Christians. At our home congregation, we have a lot of, I'll say, folks in their 20s, I can call them young people now, who spend a lot of time with our teenage group, my two kids in particular. They host a lot of Bible studies, they teach their classes at church, they show interest in their activities even outside, you know, worship services, show up at ball games or plays or whatever. And that really means a lot to my children and the children of our congregation. And we did some of that when I was this age, but not enough of it. And I just wanted to plant that seed for folks who are in that period or entering into that period. Don't discount this. The kids really need this. You know, when you're old like me, they don't listen to us anymore as much as we would like for them to. At least my own kids don't. But you carry a lot of influence when you're in this age group. And you're still considered a little bit more cool and young maybe than a lot of the parents, and I would advocate for taking advantage of that. All right, so that's some about the opportunities and advantages. We're going to talk about risks and disadvantages now. So the first one I want to talk about is kind of a broad category, distractions. I have not had another time in my life when I had more distractions than during this period. I'm going to call out a couple of them in particular, but you could add another dozen or so under this. Before we start talking about this issue of distractions, though, just one more comment on this, and that is, I think the reason that distractions are so distracting is because we don't have the right focus. So that sounds kind of simple, but I think if we have our focus in the right place, the distractions seem to take care of them of themselves. If we don't have our focus in the right place, then we can eliminate distractions or reduce them, and they're just going to get replaced with something else because we're really good at finding ways to pass our time. So the point here is, let's set our focus where it should be, and the distractions will start to fall out. If you just think about it as, I got to eliminate that distraction, and you don't set your focus where it needs to be, it's just a short-term fix, and you're going to end up back in the same place. So I'll give you a personal example. Used to coach my son's little baseball team. We had a batting cage right beside some train tracks, like 9-year-old kids. So you can imagine, you know, about half the kids, as the train would come through, you couldn't, you know, they weren't paying any attention to what they were doing. It was all about this train coming through, right? Turn around, looking at it, listening to it, you know, oh, that's cool, how loud it is. The other half of the kids, the train could come by and they wouldn't even acknowledge that it was there. So what was the difference in those kids? Was the train louder for one set of kids than the other set? It didn't have anything to do with the train. It was about their focus. Half of those kids were worried about getting their swings in, and the other half were worried about looking at the train. And I think that's the point, is it's not the distractions themselves that are going to derail us. It's what we allow them to do to us and where we have our focus or don't have our focus. So one quote that I stumbled across that I think sums this up, Hugh Howey, he's a science fiction author, writes, "It's easy to forego distractions when you have a larger goal on the horizon." So we need to, when we think about this idea of distractions, keep the focus thing in the back of your head as we run through a couple of these. If we have the right focus, the eternal focus, like we read about in Colossians chapter 3, set your mind on things above. If we have that idea, we'll be able to deal effectively with these types of things. So the first one that I want to mention, and probably the most difficult one at this age, Devin alluded to it a little bit, is this distraction of worldliness, materialism specifically. Here you are, likely for the first time in your life with a real job, maybe some real income, and with that will come the temptation to become focused on your ability to earn and spend and indulge. I think that's a risk for all of us at this time period. You probably had to live pretty cheaply when you were in college, and now here you are with some money for the first time. That's a temptation that most folks at that age have not dealt with up until then. So if you're approaching this time in your life, maybe you're already in this time and struggling with this, I would point you to Ecclesiastes. Devin mentioned this as well. We see Solomon there. My guess is Solomon's probably more wealthy than any of us are ever going to be, had more material things than we're going to have. And I think that's a pretty safe conclusion. And even Solomon came to the conclusion that pursuing these worldly things, whether you're talking about wealth or worldly wisdom or whatever, it's all vanity. So we're running short on time. I'm not going to flip to this and read it, but note Ecclesiastes 2, 9 through 11, and go back and read that. I think that encapsulates Solomon's conclusion about all these issues. That's not a problem that's going to go away as you get older. And in fact, for some people, as you progress in your career, maybe your income is getting higher, it may become more difficult for some people. But the point here is that this attitude that we take toward materialism at this age in our lives, like we talked about earlier in terms of setting a foundation, it is the one that's likely to stick with us throughout. So the Lord wants us to enjoy the fruit of our labor, but if it becomes the focus at this time, the first time maybe when we have some money of our own, that's going to be a very hard thing to reverse later on. So even outside of some of those temptations, things that we might all point to and say they're sinful, there are other things that I think fall into this category that can just be distracting, that aren't necessarily sinful. Continuing education. I'll mention this. I speak from experience here. I know on the one hand people will say if you're going to pursue a graduate degree, do it when you get out of undergrad because you're in the routine of studying. I get all that. But if you do it like I did and you're working your first full-time job all day and you're working on your MBA at night, get ready for some distractions. You can become very distracted for that period of time. Things start to get crowded out, and that is a big risk at this age if you don't watch it. The things that will get crowded out are the Lord's things. I just think that's a natural thing that we all struggle with. So we think of passages like Matthew 6:33. You don't even have to turn to that. I'm sure you know that. Seek first the kingdom of God. If we have that attitude, then it will be less likely that we become overly busy and we start to let crowd out the things that are really important. And then there are obviously other things that sort of exacerbate the problem here. Unfortunately, at this time, you're embarking on your new career, you're getting off on the right foot with your new company or your new boss or whatever. That's extremely important. We all know, you know, what they say about first impressions. So you may have the temptation of overloading yourself with work. I will say that's one area that I did not struggle with as much. A lot of these other areas I did. I wasn't a guy who wanted to work 60 or 70 hours a week. I was more into efficiency and effectiveness over effort. But everything is going to suffer if you allow this mindset to creep in, that in those first few years it's just got to all be about work, especially if you're starting a new marriage or a new family. And your relationship with God is going to suffer as well. So you sometimes convince yourself that it's just for a short period while you get established in your job, and what do we say about habits and foundations? Next thing you know, you're my age, and I work with guys like this who are still in this same routine. There's 60-hour-a-week guys because that's just who they are. It's a really a hard thing to break yourself out of when you set that pattern or that expectation for yourself or your boss or your company starts to have that expectation as well is a big risk. And that connects directly to the last bullet point here in this category related point. It's likely up until now, while you may have thought you had stress in school or whatever, let me tell you, things change when you get that first full-time job, especially if you're supporting a family at the same time. The level of work stress can be debilitating. And I will say this, this is worse now than it was when I started my first job 20-something years ago. I think the expectations for the time commitment it takes to be a good employee these days is can be overwhelming. So we've conditioned ourselves to work more hours than we need to be working. It isn't viewed as the exception anymore, as kind of going above and beyond. It's just the rule in the world that we live in. So I think this is a really big danger area for Christians, and while we're told we need to work hard and do the best we can, work as if we're working for the Lord, we can't let that start to dominate our time and energy so much that we don't have anything left. If what we're giving to God at the end of our long work week is just the leftover time and energy, if there's any left at all, that's no way to grow in our relationship with God. And that pattern gets established at this time. And the other big distraction, and I don't mean to sound like I'm talking negatively about building a family, but let's face it, if you're building a new family at this time, that's going to take a ton of work and a ton of effort and time. And as luck would have it, you're also starting your new career. You're maybe pursuing a graduate degree. You can see these things start to pile up on themselves. And obviously, this is way more important than building your new career. The only point that I'm making here is that while building the new family unit is a priority at this time, it can sometimes become the number one priority. And I think this is a struggle for us as Christians. Family is super important, but I think sometimes we have a tendency to place it up on a pedestal right up there with our faith and our relationship with God. And that's dangerous. Keeping the right perspective on your family and how that fits into your overall spiritual picture is critical. And this is the time when you're going to set that pattern. Our children are going to be paying attention to how we handle all these distractions and how we prioritize things, where God sits in the pecking order within our family and within how we spend our own time. And I'll share one more quote here from author James Baldwin. He said, "Children have never been very good at listening to their elders, but they have never failed to imitate them." So if we're looking around and wondering why our children are doing what they're doing, that's pretty much telling us why that happens. They're going to learn that from us, and how we spend our time and prioritize things at this age are likely to work their way all the way down to our children as well. So we need to be deliberate about how we're handling all these distractions and using our opportunities here. There are a dozen things you could put underneath this category too, but I just want to call out a couple things. It's often at this time that people are for the first time really developing true independence from their parents. Now, I know when you go off to college, you there's a big amount of independence there, but probably not fully. I don't know about you, but for me, I was still very dependent on my parents when I was in school. I didn't have any money. I certainly didn't have enough life experiences to be making important decisions on my own. I didn't really feel like an independent adult, so I relied on my parents for a lot. But at this time, you really are out on your own for the first time, maybe with a new spouse, maybe not. But either way, the cord is cut quite often, and you're just staring down that path of independence for the first time. And that can create a big emotional toll on some folks. Because let's face it, we're all raised differently. Some of us are more ready for this than others. But the emotional piece of it can be really difficult. But that's not the only piece. The financial part of it is real, too. And Devin alluded to this, and I want to spend a minute here. Figuring out for the first time how much it costs to function as a freestanding family unit with no subsidization from good old mom and dad back home, that can be a rude awakening. And most folks at this age really haven't progressed in their careers to the point that they eventually will. They haven't achieved the income that they eventually will. But as Devin mentioned, we often think that we should be living like we lived with mom and dad. It took them 20, 30 years to build up to that point, same sort of living accommodations, eating habits, all that kind of stuff. So it can be a rude awakening if it's not handled appropriately. Just as we talked about in some other areas, a lot of bad patterns can be established, overspending, debt. We'll skip by that since Devin mentioned that. But those are really difficult to adjust to later on in life. We need to be thinking about those here. Then once you throw kids in the mix, there's even more challenges. So we've mentioned that one of the big issues with all these distractions is we can neglect our relationship with God if we're not careful. Well, along those lines, once we have kids, I think we can run a big risk of neglecting a relationship with our spouse. So we become so kid-centered in a lot of our families that before you know it, your spousal relationship begins to suffer. So we get busy running the kids around to all their activities. And while we might think that we're sacrificing for the good of our kids, I think the best gift that we can really give our kids at this point is to continue to have a healthy relationship with our spouse. And we just need to keep that in mind and make a conscious effort as things get busier with kids. So the last category that I'm going to mention here might feel a little weird because I just talked about how sometimes it's difficult as we're building that independence from our parents. Some of us have trouble with that, and that is true, but often I think we overdo this idea of independence so much at this age that it turns into self-dependence, where we kind of take this idea to its extreme. We think that we can figure it all out on our own, can handle everything ourselves, we don't need to rely on anybody, and we start to feel like we're in control of our own destiny. We've carved out our own life, and we seem to be doing just fine, so we don't need anybody for anything, and we can become overconfident and self-dependent. So just like everything else, there has to be a balance here. We do need to create independence of our own family unit. There's no doubt about that. But we can't take that so far that we're now so self-reliant and self-confident that we start to think and to act like we don't need God anymore. I don't know about you, but I never had this problem before I hit this age. I was self-aware enough to know when I was in college that I needed a lot of help making decisions, paying bills, all kind of stuff. But then you get that first job, you start paying the bills on your own, you get your own place, nobody telling you what to do, and you start feeling like you're autonomous. And again, some of that is not all bad, but when that sort of attitude creeps into how you think about your dependence on God, and whether you place your trust in God or in yourself, that can be dangerous territory. So I think that's a big risk at this age. I actually think that while some of these things remain as problematic later in your life as they are at this age, this is one that I do think gets a little easier. I think after you've lived a few more years, you've seen a little more of what life has to offer and the challenges and difficulties, and you start to figure out that none of us are really in control of anything. So I think this is a temptation that probably gets a little easier as you get older, just in what short time period that I've been around. But I would recommend if you find yourself at this point in your life and struggling with this a little bit, spend some time with the psalm that we all know and love, Psalm 23. And because we're out of time, I won't even turn over and read the whole thing. But let that take root in your heart if you're struggling with this idea of self-dependence and self-reliance. And we know there it says, the Lord is your shepherd. You're not your own shepherd. He is. He's the one that makes you to lie down in green pastures and leads you beside the still waters. You can't provide that for yourself. Only He can. You might can pay your bills. You might can set up your own house, manage your own family, but you can't do this. Only He can, and only He can restore your soul. So spend some time with that passage if you find yourself struggling on this. So that is the end of my prepared remarks. I'm going to open it up just for a minute or so and say, did anybody come across an item as you were thinking through either advantages or disadvantages and you put on your list that you want to bring up that we really didn't touch on here? I'm sure there's dozens of them, but we're about out of time. Anybody have something that they want to mention? Yeah, it definitely can. I mean, it just got to be careful with it. I mean, it's something we all have to do. We all got to gain some independence. We've all got to build our own family unit, but we can't do that at the expense of understanding how much we still need God and we still need others. And I know I've seen folks who have gotten to that point where they just feel like they're in charge of everything and. That's just not a healthy place to be when we're trying to build a relationship with God. Yes? If you wait until you're 40, you're outside this range to start thinking that, you may be too late. You've missed a lot of experiences along the way that could have set you up for that. Good point. Anything else? All right. Thank you much for your attention.